When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
What does every grocery store aisle now have in common? Products that come in paper packaging. And we don't just mean the obvious ones like cereal boxes and juice cartons. From beauty products to boxed water, there are more opportunities to go papertarian than ever before. So why should you? Because paper comes from a renewable resource and can be recycled up to 7 times. Simply put, it's the smart choice for the environment. And it turns out, the easiest choice for you. Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/papertarian.
David, I'd just like to welcome you to the Player Series. You know, I'm so pleased to have you on the show. You've been such a great gentleman. You've marketed the sport as well as anybody that's ever played the game. And it's so nice to be able to chat to you again today with so many interesting things to speak about, because you're really highly involved. You know, I remember you played the tour in South Africa, and you also played in Europe, if I'm not mistaken, and then decided to go into teaching. And, you know, you've had so many good players over the years. And one of the things that are frustrating me right now is when I hear people talk about the modern day swing. You know, David, honestly, if you look at a book by Percy Boomer, I don't know if you ever read that book.
One of my favorites, On Learning Golf. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. He talks about so many of the things today. Henry Cotton wrote a book, must be 100 years ago, with the cross-handed and all these different putting strokes and things. And they had the speed slots and the gay and the clubs. There is, I'm dying to hear of one new thing that I've never heard of in my life. And I can assure you, there's nothing. There's no such thing as a modern day swing. What do you think?
Well, I tend to agree with you there, Gary. I mean, look, you've got modern athletes now, athletes have improved. I mean, you started this whole trend, and the fitness aspect and the change in equipment. I think the equipment now matches the player a lot better, where back in your day and even my day, it was a bit of a trial and error to find the right driver, find the right shaft. Now, obviously, you can pinpoint what suits you best, and even golf balls. I mean, they're finding golf balls. Some spin more, some spin less. So there have been some advances, obviously. But as far as technique is concerned, I mean, we've seen it all before. I mean, it's like, hey, maybe we're not wearing tweed jackets and playing with hickory shafts. But the fact is, I mean, you know, they're still trying to figure out how to get that damn ball in the hole in as few shots as possible, you know? And so, yeah. I mean, you know, what do they call the modern swing? I mean, the modern swing now is something which I know is really, makes you angry, as the old sort of, you know, hey, this position here, which, you know, we've seen players in the past, Trevino, Palmer, and et cetera. And, you know, it's a way to play, but if there's any longevity to the game, I mean, if you look at the greats, I mean, they never had that position. It was almost as if, you know, they had this neutral position, which Hogan was a big advocate of.
Exactly. If you look at longevity, and of course, today, everybody's got a different opinion. I wanted to have longevity, and I still want longevity at 85. And if you look at Palmer, he had a very, very short career. Nicklaus won majors for 25 years. I won for 20. Palmer won for 6. Now, you can play golf that way. You can play, yes. But I don't know. You see, if your body's not strong enough, you start to hit those hooks, and you can't get the club back, your backswing gets shorter and shorter. If you look at John Rahm, this highly talented man, I mean, this guy could really play. His backswing, honest to goodness, is so short. And what's going to happen in 10 years' time? It's going to get shorter and shorter. So you got to think of the length of the backswing. And I was very interested to see one of the commentators during the Masters said, oh, you know, They don't have these long flowing swings anymore. You know, I've never heard such nonsense in my life. The greatest players that ever lived, the greatest swing ever that ever man ever, ever, ever had by a mile was Ben Hogan. He had a long backswing. Sam Snead had a long backswing. Jack Nicklaus had a long backswing. Tiger Woods had a long backswing. Every superstar. Now, to me, I have my own version of a superstar. Everybody uses the word superstar too lightly. I think you've got to win six majors. I've never seen a superstar that didn't have a, that had a short backswing. And, you know, I was blessed to be around Hogan. And, of course, he'd never say much, but he said some things to me that really enabled me to win 18 major championships. And so, you know, you've got to be very careful what you say. The same as they criticize DeChambeau. You know, oh, here comes the kook. Here comes the scientist. Well, the shoe's on the other foot. Actually, DeChambeau, and I'd be anxious to hear what you've got to say, I think he has an outstanding swing. Now, he does slash at it occasionally, but that's what makes him exciting. But you and I know it's not long driving that wins tournaments. It's an asset, but it's always the putting and the mind. What do you think?
Right. Well, yeah, Bryson DeChambeau, he is he's a different type of individual. Let's face it. He's got an inquisitive mind. He's very scientific in his approach. And I mean, he's not stupid. I mean, look, he realizes, like the US Open, hey, if I hit it 50 yards further, closer to the green than these other guys and coming out of this rough, I've got a much better chance than somebody hitting a 7-9 when I'm hitting a wedge. So, you know, it's interesting. I mean, obviously time will tell. Hopefully his body can stand up to the, I mean, he certainly puts a lot of stress on his body. I mean, you know, even on the eve of the Masters, Gary, he was out there for an hour pounding drivers, and whether, you know, certainly he's got to work out in order to facilitate that. But it's I mean, he's got a very simple swing, very simple. I mean, it's sort of a, you know, you hear about Mo Norman, right? I mean, I watched him hit balls, and I'm sure you saw him over the years. I mean, he was a great player in Canada, but he was certainly one of the straightest hitters, and he had a what they call a one plane swing, and that's what DeChambeau works on. But it's interesting. I think it's good for the game. You've got people like that talking about something, people like this. I mean, in your day, I mean, you were sort of a one-off. The fact is, working out, what the heck's that? Are you crazy? I mean, it's going to hurt. You're going to lose your feel. You're going to do this. You're going to do that. And so you disproved that. And I think, you know, maybe he's disproving things as well. And the fact is that, look, if you get bigger, you get stronger, and you have mobility, you're going to hit the ball a long way. And as you say, look, it's about putting, hitting your iron shots close to the hole. So golf is a multifaceted game. Let's face it. It's not just one aspect. I mean, if you look at all the greats, including yourself, I mean, all right, you're a great bunker player. You're a great chipper. You're a great putter. You know, you're a great fairway wood player. So, I mean, you've got to have all these elements going. I think that's the difficulty with this game. It's not just like baseball where, hey, smash it out of the park and, hey, you're going to be a great player if you do that regularly. In golf, I mean, there's how many long drive guys have actually been successful? So we're seeing maybe a change in trends, and I think it's interesting. I mean, we talk about the evolvement of the game, and I mean, that is obviously power is going to be, I mean, and we'll talk about that, how they rein in some of that power, because some of these golf courses are being made a little bit obsolete in many instances, which is a shame. But you know, I mean, I guess it's called progress, right, Gary?
Well, you know, here's an interesting thing that the leaders of the game have got to wake up and realize, and I admire the leaders of the game, but they've got to have more vision. Where DeChambeau ends up now, you're going to have people come out and carry the ball over that. You've never seen a big player like LeBron James or Michael Jordan come and play golf. They're coming because these young people at university now, they are learning that there's longevity in golf and you can make a lot of money for a long time. Whereas other sports, an NFL player is there for 3 years and he leaves and, man, he's been hit in the head and his shoulders and he's in agony for the rest of his life. So, and everybody wants to have a sport to participate in for as long as possible. One of the great joys, I wake up every day going to the gym. Can I beat my age by 18 shots? Can I stretch and get my swing longer? You know, there's always a challenge until the day you die. That's if you love the game, which I just love the game. I love playing with business people or anybody. And I love talking to young people. And people say to me, these young kids, what do I do to become a champion? I said, it's a thing called it. And I'm just going to digress for a minute. I think the player on the tour at the moment who has really got it is Jordan Spieth. Now, Jordan Spieth, he is as good a player, I think, from 60 yards that the world has ever seen. I mean, that's a big statement. But he's not in the top 30 players from tee to green. And so, but he's got it. He knows how to compete. He knows how to never give up. He knows how to play the right shot at the right time. It doesn't always come off, but because he has a lot of faults in his swing. And if he ever gets them right, goodness me, will he be number one in the world without a question. And he's a wonderful young man. He's a real all-American guy, and I just love him. So, but Winston Churchill said, the height that great men reached and kept were not attained by sudden flight, but while his opponents were sleeping, he was toiling upward in the night. And that's what I did. I went to the gym at 12 o'clock when I came back from a dinner, and I asked the hotel manager, please let me have the key for the gym. No. And I said, please, now I promise you I'll keep it tidy. Now, this is what this man DeChambeau is doing, and I just love his work ethic. And don't forget, when he won the tournament at Arnold Palmer's course, he won it not because of his long driving. He won it because of his putting. The way the commentators were talking about, you would have thought, and I said to the one commentator, how far did he drive Westwood by? Oh, 90 yards. Well, the way you guys were talking, you'd think he'd have a 20-shot lead coming to the last hole with his long hitting. It all came down to DeChambeau holding a lot of putts. And this is what always wins the tournament. Tiger Woods was not a good driver of the ball, accurate-wise. Neither was Phil Mickelson, but they were one and two in the world. We know you can play a bad round of golf, and if you putt well, you can break 70. But you cannot break 70 if you're putting badly.
Right, yeah. I remember years ago you saying, Gary, there's going to be people that are going to be coming out, they're going to be hitting the ball 400 yards. This is 20 years ago, I remember chatting to you. And there's no question. Look, athletes are better. I mean, training is better. Although having said that, I think some of the training, I mean, I'd like to hear your opinion on this, because if you look at Tiger, I think to some extent he's trained the wrong way. I mean, I think a lot of his injuries could be actually maybe based on how he was working out. I mean, running marathons with weight belts on and so on and so forth. And so I always remember John Daly telling me, Gary, this is the opposite of the way you think. I said, John, you ever work out? He says, no. He says, my theory is, he said, no, you can pull a muscle, but you can't pull fat. So that's a different approach, I guess.
Right? Well, I want to say this, that John Daly, in my opinion, he was second to Tiger on the tour with ability. This man had such ability, but he certainly had unbelievable ability, a great touch.
Yeah. So what are your feelings on Rory McIlroy? Because obviously immense talent, but just doesn't seem to have fulfilled it. I mean, if you would say probably at this stage of the game as much, I think he's what, won four majors. But I mean, you'd say he probably underachieved in many respects.
Yes. Well said. He's definitely underachieved, because this man has the best golf swing on the tour. And I know he's obsessed with hitting the ball a long way, but that's not a bad fault. He's a great exerciser. I just love the guy. He exercises, and to win four majors as a start is phenomenal. But, you know, I'm expecting him to go on. I mean, every year, I just think he's going to win the Masters, because the course is made for him. There's never been a golf course that has made more for him than that golf course. What is wrong with him? I don't know. I don't profess to know, but I do know one thing. It's not in the swing. And if he's looking for it in the swing, and I see he had Pete Cowan here, fine. But I don't think you should be having lessons from a pro the week before the Masters. I don't think you should be doing that. But everybody's got their own opinion. I think when I wanted to win the Grand Slam, and when I went to, I used to go into a reverie. I used to do meditating. I used to do positive thinking. I mean, I don't want to go into the whole thing, but I trained myself mentally to win the tournament. When I wanted to beat Jack Nicklaus to win the Grand Slam, I went to the scoreboard in the morning at 6:30, and I sat in front of the scoreboard on a Tai Chi position, and I visualized Gary Player, my name, being on that scoreboard. And I did so many things that were very different to athletes that do today. Now, there's no question the reason that Rory McIlroy It's nothing to do with his swing at all. The swing is not the thing. It's the mind. He's got to get that right when he plays in that tournament. And I don't know what he thinks about it. I don't know if he's nervous. You don't know what's inside of a man, David. But right. My goodness me, if ever I've seen a man with talent, it's Rory McIlroy. And we all want to see him win the Grand Slam. Same as we want to see Jordan Spieth win the Grand Slam. So if Jordan Spieth gets his swing right, he will win the Grand Slam. There's no question. Because this guy is, he's got it. Really, how many players can I see on the tour that have got it? My idea of it, not many. Wonderful strikers of the ball, wonderful scorers. I don't know how consistent they are at playing. That's another thing that's important. But I don't know, does money have an effect? You know, they're making hundreds of millions. To me, money wasn't the thing. If somebody, I didn't play golf for money because there wasn't much money. I played because I wanted to be the best. And so did Arnold. And so did Jack. And so did Trevino. And so did Watson. And so did Hogan. I won't say that about Snead. He loved money, man. Money. That man would travel from here to Australia for $5,000.
If you use paper, you're a human. But if you choose paper, you're a papertarian. Someone who lives a paper-based lifestyle because it has a positive impact on the planet. And also because it's the easiest choice you'll make all day. Seriously. It's as easy as reaching for boxed instead of bottled water. It's as easy as opting for beauty products that come in paper packaging. It's as easy as grabbing eggs in a cardboard container. And that's all in one trip to the grocery store, which, if we're being honest, you were planning to go to anyway. But paper isn't just an easy choice. Papertarians know that it's the smart choice, too. Because paper comes from trees, a renewable and sustainably managed resource. And paper products are designed to be recycled. In fact, when you choose products that come in paper-based packaging, those fibers can go on to be recycled up to 7 times. So why wouldn't you go Papertarian? I'll wait. Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/papertarian.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Calling all men. When was the last time you had a really good cry? A recent survey found that women cry on average 5 times a month, while men cry on average only once a month. Studies have shown that crying can support your mental, your physical, and your emotional health. I'm Radhi Devlukia, and on my podcast, A Really Good Cry, we push against typical societal norms. We embrace the real, the messy, and the beautiful, providing a space for raw, unfiltered conversations that celebrate vulnerability and allow you to tune in to share, connect, and find comfort together.
Our tears come as a way to let us release what we can't hold anymore.
I trust that no one's ever going to find out those deepest, darkest secrets.
Yeah, it's been a hard day. She walks out, and this is what she looks like.
Oh my gosh, give her an Oscar.
Listen to A Really Good Cry with me, Radhi Devlukia, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And how do you see the great champions of the past, your era, and even subsequent to that? I mean, how do you see them versus the modern day player, shall we say? Do you see there's the... I mean, do you see there's more love in the game, those players back then? You talked about the money. I mean, obviously, these players are making so much money now, flying around in private jets and everything else. Does that somehow dampen their ability to sort of maybe become great at winning a bunch of majors?
Brandon Grace said to me at Cape Town, who I love, by the way, we were at Fan Court, and he said, you know, when you and Jack and Arnold and Tom Watson won tournaments, there were only about 30 players you had to beat. Today, we got to beat at least 80 players. I said, you're right, you got to beat 80 players. But I came down during COVID in Philadelphia at my daughter's house, and I sat down and I got all the players that played in our time. There were 59 major champions playing our tour at that time. Think about it, 59. They're certainly not 59 now. So people underestimate players of the past and what they do at present. When I played the tour, I made the same mistake as Brandon. I thought, oh, well, this is much tougher to win golf tournaments today than when Hogan played. Oh, you just look who played when Hogan was there. Just sit down and do your homework and see the players that were there. There were players that golfers on this tour have never even heard of. And you think of Bobby Jones, the scores he did with a ball that went 80 yards less, a walking stick, a face on the club that looked like a frying pan. I mean, in the conditions that he played and the scores he did, unbelievable. We must have respect for present and for past. The game, I'm anxious to know what you think. You're going to go to St. Andrews for the Open soon. And on a calm day, the right conditions, Bryson DeChambeau is going to drive 9 greens. Now, what do you feel? I mean, I'm in favor of slowing the ball down. Otherwise, we can't build more golf courses. A lot of people who are city slickers and don't understand the situation of water, that's the biggest issue. We're going to run out of water in the world by the year 2025. We'll be short of 25% of water. Now, can you go and build longer golf courses? No, it's too expensive. Machinery is a fortune. I mean, the fertilization, but the water is the issue. So we have no choice but to slow the ball down. I know Tom Watson said the other day, and I respect his opinion, he doesn't think they should slow the ball down. Arnold and Jack and a host of others, I think Trevino believes in it. I think you believe in it. If you don't, it's going to become a joke on how golf is played. And I mean, we don't want to see that because the average man cannot relate to it. What do you think?
Well, you know, I think it boils down, Gary. Look, I mean, I agree with you. I mean, something has to be done because otherwise, as I say, you know, every golf course is going to be a pitch and putt type course. And so it's, I mean, how, when you think about preparing a golf course, they will say, well, make the courses fast and narrow the fairways, thicken the rough. But that's for 1 week a year. What are the poor members going to do the rest of the time? So I think when you look at legislation, I've always felt that there should be, I won't say two sets of rules, but I think that the tour players, maybe the USGA at that elite level, need to govern themselves. I mean, I think the average golfer who wants to go out there and have some fun, and if he hits it 20 yards longer with a particular driver or a particular ball, hey, have at it, because they're just going to have more enjoyment. But at the tour player level, I mean, it has. I mean, take baseball, for instance. I mean, look at Major League Baseball. They don't use aluminium bats. They use wooden bats, okay? So there can be some changes, and maybe the tour has to start to regulate itself and figure out, okay, if we want to make this a game for the future, because otherwise you're gonna eliminate players. I mean, you think of players now like a Corey Pavin. How would they compete today? It would be impossible. I mean, here's a player that worked the ball and did this and did that with the golf ball. But so you're seeing, I mean, yes, we know it's an athletic sport, but the fact is you want to bring all types of players. As I say, it's more than just long hitting, as you say, being able to control the ball, being able to control your distances, control the shape of the shot, the trajectory, etc. So I don't know. I just felt that there maybe should be what they call it, bifurcation. I think it's a fancy word that they use, whereby, hey, there's some slightly different rules for the tour, you know? So I don't know if that's an answer or not. I mean, everybody wants to play what the tour players are playing, but let's face it, Gary, they're not playing the same clubs or using the same ball that the tour players are using.
No, I spoke to Peter Dawson of the RNA, who I got on extremely well with, but he and I completely disagreed with each other. I said there should be equipment for pros and the amateurs should be allowed to use what they like, because we need more people to play golf. You don't want to cut the ball back for the amateurs. You don't want to stop the long putter for amateurs. A man's got the yip so badly. A friend of mine was 3 putting from 2 feet. So he gave up the game and they took the long putter away. Let him enjoy it. I mean, what the hang? Now, I don't believe in the long putter for professional golf. I agree with you. It should be maybe the pro professional golfers should run their side of golf and the amateurs should run their side of the golf. It's not a case of disrespect. It's a case that professionals know a lot more than amateurs about the game. And it's like teachers. I mean, you know, if you're going to go to a man for a lesson, you better go to the right person. You better go to the person, you know, if I was a young pro today, I'm coming to you for a lesson because you played. You just didn't read about something and come into the game and now profess to be a great teacher. Pete Cowan, I like his idea because he played. You've got to have been in the arena to understand the game. Now, teachers, I think they're teachers for the club pros, who are good for their members. They can teach young boys playing the game. But when it comes to teaching champions, wow. I mean, I just see David. I just look at the golfers. Think about it. Trevor Immelman, Schwartzel, Mike Weir, Ian Baker Finch. I can go to Martin Keimer. I can go down the line, David, who won majors, who couldn't play anymore. So why did they go and change? Now you go to somebody who's never been in the arena and you're going to listen to him. You got to go in that case. If you want to know something about business, I'm not going to the an average person. I'm going to a champion who knows about business. So everybody for their last, I'm not criticizing teachers at all. I'm just saying it's all categorized. You got to, if you want to have a lesson, you go to so-and-so and so-and-so and so-and-so, depending on your play. But man, if I was a young guy and I want to know something about the game, I'm going to Lee Trevino. He was as sharp as a tack, this man, and know when to play, what shot, how to think. David, there's a lifetime on how to play golf. A lot of players can hit the ball magnificently, but they don't know how to play, what shot, how to think. I mean, it's a science, and people don't realize it. And you cannot know that science unless you have been in the arena yourself. How can a man teach you how to do certain things when he's never been in the arena?
Right.
And you want to go to teachers, not young guys on the block. You want to go to people that have been around a long time. You've been around a long time. And when you started, like me, when I started, I did things wrong in the theory of the game. When you started, you were teaching certain things that you wouldn't teach today. Changes the price of survival.
Right, right. Yeah, and it's interesting. You know, you talk about people like Lee Trevino, obviously, I mean, shot makers extraordinaire. I mean, he actually had quite an influence on young Tony Finau. Tony Finau, obviously, you know, one of the better ball strikers out there, one of the longest hitters out there. I've known him a long time. He actually grew up in a very poor family, and I mean, he's done exceedingly well. I mean, he hasn't quite broken through to anyone one tournament, but if you look at it, he's had like 40 top tens in the last 3 years. So I mean, a ridiculous number. Lee spent quite a bit of time with Tony talking about shot making and stuff, which I think a lot of the young players and speaking of people like yourselves and so on, I think they'd benefit tremendously because it was a different game back then. But there is still that factor, I think, in today's game, you know, where a craftsman can still be successful. I mean, as long as you're long enough, okay, somebody like a Jordan Spieth, as we know, he's not the most straightest driver in the world, but you know, when he gets it within a certain distance, my goodness, I mean, he is the best in the world. And there's other players, there are a few other players like that. So I think it's a case of learning as much as you can. I mean, you did. I mean, you picked everybody's minds and you created your own.
I did, yes, I did.
Your own approach. But you took all that information and you figured out how it would work for you, right? Which I think is what the greats really do.
David, you just made such sense. If Ben Hogan had said to me, Gary, I see something in your swing, I would have got, it would make you play better. I would have got on a plane from South Africa and come here for the lesson and gone back to South Africa because he knew what he was talking about. And that is so important to have the knowledge. The knowledge in golf is so important. If a young guy, I mean, I'm watching a young girl up in Augusta there swinging the club. And I say to her, what do you want to do? She says, I want to be a pro one day. I said, okay, what are you thinking about when you hit the ball? She says, oh, well, here's the club. I just think about the club coming back square to the ball and I visualize the target. And David, 6 out of 10 young people tell me this. I said, oh, you've got a chip in the ball, have you? You tell the chip, go to the target and it goes. I said, can't you understand? It's a movement in the swing that makes the ball go straight. You can't just visualize, you bring the club back square and there's the target. You visualize the ball going to the target. That ball doesn't know you. It will not go to the target unless you apply the correct action.
Right. Yeah.
And when I was a young man, you're so right. I asked everybody, and I've got to tell you a lovely story. I played with Sam Snead at Greenbrier as a young man. I just got over here. It was actually one of my, I think my second golf tournament I played in America. And I played 36 holes with him at the end, and we tied. And on his home course, and we went 7 holes in the playoff, and he beat me. And I turned around, and I said, Mr. Snead, is there anything you can see in my swing that can help me? He says, I ain't seen your swing yet, son. Whereas Jack Nicklaus, who's the greatest gentleman I've ever played with, you ask him anything, he'd try and help you. I played him in the World Match Play in London twice, 36 holes on a long wet golf course in October. All the new newspapers unanimously said he's going to beat me. I beat him 6-4, 5-4 the next year. And I was on the tee, and Jack said, why is your right hand extremely over to the left? Get it back to where it was. Now, not many guys do that. Jack Nicklaus is the gentleman of gentlemen to play golf. He wants to beat you when you're playing well. And so that's been a very exciting thing and a very interesting thing for me, that the young people today, they'd rather take advice from somebody who's never been able to play at all than somebody who's been champions. And that's fine with me. And that's fine with me and fine with Jack. We don't mind. But you can teach people can learn so much from experience. But we have a different brand of thinking now. And it's a different time to play. There's big money. It's more business. It's not like we were. We'd get in a car and we'd drive 1,000 miles together. And we'd stop and we'd go and play another golf course on the way. And we'd stay at people's houses almost every weekend. We did things that don't exist now. But things go according to the time. You can never say what was right or what was wrong, but I know one thing. I enjoyed the play of the tour much more than I would have enjoyed it today, but I would have liked to have had the opportunity to play for the money. You know that I think 10th place at Augusta this year, if I'm not mistaken now, I think got $300,000. Yeah. Nobody ever made $300,000 for being the leading money winner, ever. Arnold Palmer was the first man to win $100,000 in a year. But that was not the issue. We had a great time. We played with in 2 pro-ams. We love to be with people. It's not like that anymore. It's a completely different game. And so be it.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, players do have shorter careers these days. I mean, I think in terms, maybe it is the money factor. I mean, people say, well, DeChambeau, let's see how he is in 10 years' time. Well, he's probably won $1 billion by that time and really just going to, you know, he's not worried about it. But I mean, it is interesting, as I say, the longevity of the game. Even if you look at some players, even like you would call him a journeyman player, but somebody like a Steve Stricker, who's played well in his 20s, 30s, and his 40s, and even his 50s. There is something about the fact that probably players who don't get that many injuries probably last longer as well. Maybe a swing that's easier on the body. Who knows? But I want to talk about one thing, Gary. I mean, I think one of the, you know, obviously your mental toughness there really helped you in match play situations. I mean, I would love to have seen you play it in a President's Cup or, obviously the Ryder Cup. But you're probably one of your greatest matches, if you will, was against Tony Lima, right? When you won the World Match Play, when you were 7 down. Yeah, with 17 to play, right? And everybody written you off, including him. I think he'd say, no worry, don't worry, Gary, you'll be invited back next year regardless, you know?
That's right. That's exactly what happened. We're walking down the 18th hole, and I'm 7 down. He says, never mind, Gary, you'll be invited back next year. You are the US Open champion, and you've won this championship. And I think to myself, man, it ain't over until the fat lady sings, I'm going to get you, my man. And he goes in. And the press are all saying, wow, you're going to beat the present world match play champion. And I didn't have anything to eat. I went straight to the practice tee and I was hooking the ball and I was trying to work out why I was hooking it. And I practiced it and I got on the first tee in the afternoon. And what did I do? Hooked it and lost another hole. So, but you see, you've got to understand, that's why I was trying to tell people watching the Masters this year. They all said, oh, well, Hideki's got it sewn up. I said, what? You can have a 9-shot lead at Augusta. I made, Arnold Palmer and I played 1 year at Augusta, playing the third hole, He was 9 shots ahead of me. We stood on the 11th tee. I was 2 shots ahead of him. Excuse me, the 12th tee. I mean, people don't understand that. When DeChambeau said, this is a par 67 for me, I thought, "Woo, boy, that's a big statement." So that course there, there's certain things about that course you can never explain. It's a hidden monster.
Right.
So, you can have everything go right and you can shoot. As many of us have shot 64s and so, but my goodness, you can lose. And, you know, look at Hideki at the end. He doesn't have to make a 6 at number 15 because now he's got to chip back with the water on the other side.
Yeah.
And then he makes bogey at the next. He doesn't have to hit 2 drives on the last 2 holes like that either. I tell you something, you better not go to sleep thinking you've got it, even if you're 6 or 7, as we saw with Greg Norman and other players. Art Wall won the tournament 6 behind. I won it 7 behind. I won 3 tournaments in a row 7 behind, in a row. So people, you got to knowledge. I come back to knowledge. Education in life is the light. It's so important. But what you got to do, you got to play golf and you got to sit there and you got to say, I love adversity. Do you know I used to pray for adversity when I was playing? I used to say, and I'm a great believer in prayer. It helps me to run my life, good things and bad things. And I used to say, my Father, I'm going to love adversity today because I know I'm going to get it. So I can't avoid it. I don't want to hate it. Why hate something when you're going to get it? You can't avoid it. I'm going to love it. And I'm going to show you what a man I am. So I had a different trend of thinking. And I never felt sorry for myself, ever, because I had enough of that when I was a kid. And I never worried about choking. David, this is an awful big statement. I never choked. I didn't win a tournament when I had a position to win. I was a position to win the Masters twice, and Arnold Palmer held a 65-foot putt at Augusta from the right-hand side of the green. And then I had another time, I had a 6-iron in my hand, and I put it in the bunker, front bunker, buried, and I never won. But I never choked. Because I said, am I going to choke about hitting a golf ball and winning when in Syria and in Iraq and places in the world and in Africa where, you know, there are wars? And am I going to worry about playing golf and hitting a golf ball? I adjusted my mind. I could go on and on and on and on and on, tell you the things I did for my mind. Very different. I did very different to compete.
If you use paper, you're a human. But if you choose paper, you're a papertarian. Someone who lives a paper-based lifestyle because it has a positive impact on the planet. And also because it's the easiest choice you'll make all day. Seriously. It's as easy as reaching for boxed instead of bottled water. It's as easy as opting for beauty products that come in paper packaging. It's as easy as grabbing eggs in a cardboard container. And that's all in one trip to the grocery store, which, if we're being honest, you were planning to go to anyway. But paper isn't just an easy choice. Papertarians know that it's the smart choice, too. Because paper comes from trees, a renewable and sustainably managed resource. And paper products are designed to be recycled. In fact, when you choose products that come in paper-based packaging, those fibers can go on to be recycled up to 7 times. So why wouldn't you go Papertarian? I'll wait. Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/papertarian.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Calling all men. When was the last time you had a really good cry? A recent survey found that women cry on average 5 times a month, while men cry on average only once a month. Studies have shown that crying can support your mental, your physical, and your emotional health. I'm Radhi Devlukia, and on my podcast, A Really Good Cry, we push against typical societal norms. We embrace the real, the messy, and the beautiful. providing a space for raw, unfiltered conversations that celebrate vulnerability and allow you to tune in to share, connect, and find comfort together.
Our tears come as a way to let us release what we can't hold anymore.
And I trust that no one's ever going to find out those deepest, darkest secrets.
Yeah, it's been a hard day. She walks out, and this is what she looks like.
Oh my gosh, give her an Oscar!
Listen to A Really Good Cry with me, Radhi Devlukia, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So here's a story, Gary. You can deny it or agree with it. That I heard one of your peers in South Africa was a great Harold Henning, one of the many Henning brothers. And he said, I believe this. He was saying that you were playing together in the World Cup and you're rooming together. And I think he woke up at 2 a.m. and he said, what the hell's going on here? Because he heard you talking to yourself in front of the mirror that hey, I'm going to be number one. I'm the greatest. I mean, it's like, you know, almost like a Muhammad Ali type thing, right? I mean, was that true or false?
No, that's true. He said, are you talking in your sleep or are you awake? And then there was no gym. I didn't have a gym there in Spain in the hotel where we were staying. So I had George Bloomberg and his wife were staying in an adjoining room. So I knocked on the door. I said, George, come here. He says, what do you want? He was in his pajamas. I said, get on my back. Now here's a man of 70 and he's holding on and I'm doing my squats. He says, Gary, I don't like this. I said, shut up. So the next morning I knocked on the door. He says, the door's locked. I'm not coming. out.
Right, right,
so,
right.
I don't know.
It's interesting when you look back. I mean, you spoke about Greg Norman a while ago. And I would say there's one of the most talented players who really, if you think about it, was very much an underachiever. I mean, he won 2 majors. He won 2 Opens. But, I mean, he had a lot of things happen to him. But here's a guy that just something was snake bitten or something. I mean, you know, you would have expected him to sort of won 8 to 10 majors in his career.
Yes, yes.
I mean, from a pure talent standpoint, I mean, there was nobody better than him at that stage. No, nobody. Yeah. Right. I mean, he found it difficult to close the deal.
No, that's right. You see, you can mention this about a lot of players in life. And you know, the trouble is, when you do it, you don't mean to be critical. I'm never critical. I respect for everybody. But there are facts. There are facts that you cannot deny, and some players might not like it. But that is a fact. And Greg Norman, I mean, I never saw a better driver of a golf ball than Greg Norman. Never. But there was something wrong. There was something wrong, and I don't profess to know what I don't think he played under pressure very well. I think that was something that I noticed in his career, and what the reason was, I don't know, but he should have won at least 6 majors, at least. Right. So, but you know, here's the thing. I got 22 grandchildren, 6 children and 2 great-grandchildren. And when I talk to young people too, I say, please don't ever use the word if. If Ben Hogan never had to go to war, and if Ben Hogan never had an accident, he would have won way over 20 major championships. He went to war in his prime. So he never played in 30 major championships in his prime. Same with Sam Snead, basically. What would they have done?
Right.
If Tom Watson had won the PGA, he would have won the Grand Slam.
Yeah.
If Rory McIlroy had won the Masters. If Jordan Spieth wins the PGA, which he will in time, I think. And if this and if that, I mean, you can go on and on and on. If Arnold Palmer won the PGA, he would have won the Grand Slam. If Trevino won the Masters, he would have won the Grand Slam. But you got to laugh and you got to enjoy the game. And, you know, fortunately, I'm so delighted I came along at my time. Yes, would I like to have had the opportunity to play against Tiger and these guys? I would have loved it with this modern day equipment where I could have hit the ball 50 yards further and play on greens like this, free telephone calls, flying in a private jet, you know, it's just free food, people meeting you at the airport at 10 o'clock at night. I mean, it's a dream world. It's not on. And, but I'd like to just digress for a minute and just say, I cannot tell you how excited I was to see Hideki Matsuyama win the tournament. I played in Asia for 30 years and went to Japan on many occasions, and they've had so many good players. Jumbo Ozaki, you know, Aoki, and to go, you can go on. They've had a host of good players come close to winning majors. The Japanese people, 6% of the population play golf. They're fanatical about the game. I can tell you, if we never had this COVID lockdown, you would have had players, or excuse me, pressmen get on a plane the night before the final of Augusta. They would have come there just to cover Hideki, whether he won or lost. I've said to him, I'm very happy you won because you'll now be the prime minister and I won't need a visa to go there. But the thing is that what he did was just remarkable, and it's going to boost the game of golf to such a degree in Asia, which benefits us all. And I cannot speak highly enough on, and also the way he hung in there. And man, the way this guy rips through the ball. I mean, I've always said you got to have an uninterrupted flow of motion through the ball. And look at him. He goes through like lightning. I mean, it's wonderful. And that's, if you don't do that under pressure, you've had it.
Yeah, he's a very mild-mannered guy, doesn't say a lot. In fact, it was quite funny. A Japanese reporter was saying, well, he doesn't speak much English, but he also doesn't speak much Japanese. So, you know, Gary, I want to pay you a compliment, because a lot of people say, so what is it about Gary, you know, that, what is it about Gary? And I said, you know, one of the things is, there's very few people in this world who, when you're around, the vibes run off. And I think your enthusiasm and zest for life and your positiveness, I think it rubs off on everybody. I just want to tell you this because I know it's like, it's you have what I would call that feel good factor. And so obviously you utilize that in your daily life. And I think, you know, people that you come into contact with, whether you're promoting fitness and health and the game of golf as a whole and globalizing the game to make it better for everybody. But I think that's one of the things to me that I've always sort of felt about, wow, you know, you just feel good after being around you. So if I feel good being around you, you're going to feel good about being around yourself as well.
Well, thank you, David. That's such a nice compliment, and I appreciate that. But I just love people, man. I speak to the old lady who's sweeping the airport. I speak to a guy sweeping the street. I just love people. I've been blessed to be around, from president to poor villages in Africa and India. And you learn something from everybody when you go into those villages in Africa and India. You learn about humility, and you learn about a very essential ingredient, and that's called gratitude. I'm so grateful. I never go to bed ever, not one night of my life, to say thank you. I like to, when I arrive at Augusta, for example, I like to walk through Magnolia Lane, which I don't do on every occasion, but I walk through there, this ambience of this place, the great beauty. President Eisenhower has been there. Bobby Jones, this wonderful, wonderful man, and Clifford Roberts, and I just say, I've won this 3 times, second 3 times, top 10, 14 times, most number of cuts, most number of times. How lucky am I? I've come to say thank you amongst these trees. One must never forget to be grateful for things, because when you think what's transpiring around the world today, and having traveled more miles than anybody that ever lived, these eyes of mine have seen things that are so terrifying, good and bad, but it reminds you to say a little word called thank you. Very, very important. But thank you very much. Quite honestly, I think the same about you. You've always smiling. You're always pleasant. You're extremely well-mannered. Thank you for being with us. You and I could speak forever on this, but thank you very much indeed. I've really enjoyed being with you, my friend.
Thanks, Gary. Enjoyed it so much. See you down the road.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Player Series on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast.
This episode brought to you by 20th Century Studios' Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Director Wes Ball breathes new life into the epic franchise. As a ruthless king attempts to build his empire at the expense of the remaining human race, a young ape begins a journey to fight for a future for apes and humans alike. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Enter the kingdom in IMAX on May 10th and theaters everywhere. Get tickets now.
What's up, y'all? Janice Torres here.
And I'm Austin Hankwitz.
We're the hosts of Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories, a podcast presented by iHeartRadio's Ruby Studios and Intuit QuickBooks. Join us as we speak with small business owners about the tools they use to turn their ideas into success.
From finding that initial spark of entrepreneurship to organizing payments and invoices, we've got you covered. So follow and listen to Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You've probably heard a lot about electrified vehicles lately. Well, Toyota has electrified options for every lifestyle. We've got hybrids, no plug needed.
All right, let's go.
But we also have plug-in hybrids, if that's your thing. You can even go 100% electric in the Toyota BZ4X. With so many options for reducing carbon emissions, Toyota is electrified, diversified. Learn more about our Beyond Zero vision for the future at toyota.com/beyondzero.